On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Here we go.
Whatever.
Oh, shut up. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I can't believe it. Oh my God, this is incredible, isn't it? I can't believe it, but I've got to believe it because it's true. Hey, it's so good to be with you as the music fades out, especially. It's great to do it. How are you, though? Let me just take this moment to get inside your head. Ech. What's all these dead things? Oh, they're brain cells. Very, very nice. Very, very exquisite for you. This is the Ron Van Dam Show. My name is that. Not Show. Show is not my last name, but it's very similar to the part inside of it. And it's really a pleasure to be with you, not as much as it's a pleasure for you to be with me, though. Look at it that way. Hey, we're going to have a good time today. We're going to speak to some people and listen to some people and talk about people behind their backs, which is what I do best. I am very talkative as soon as you walk away. I may be very shy and introverted. Yeah, right. I may say very little that makes any sense. But as soon as you walk away from me, like, whoa, the floodgates open. I can say tons of things. I just never shut up about you. But that's complimentary. I think talking behind somebody's back is very complimentary because it means even though they've left the room and basically your life forever, you're still talking about them, about what a bitch they are and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's flattering. I think it's nice to be remembered in that sense, don't you? No, you don't? Oh, fine, wonderful. All right, let's get things started right off the bat because this is a very, very important thing.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
This is so freaky, I can't believe it. I was complaining about 2-3 days ago on this very forum that, this is a forum now, by the way, that it was the 10th time that I had said, this is the coldest day of the year, of the season. And I remember saying it and I remarked at it. I said, oh my goodness, I said it not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, not five times, not six times, not seven times, not eight times, not nine times, but 10 times I've said this. And we were laughing. We were just laughing. And now again, for the 11th time, I'm saying this is the coldest day of the season. It just keeps getting colder. How long is this going to go on? Temperatures today when I woke up in my New England area studio, temperature was zero. There was no temperature. It didn't have one. It was not in existence. 0 degrees Fahrenheit, that is. Oh, you're talking Fahrenheit. Oh, Ron, well, I know you're talking Fahrenheit. Yeah, it's zero. It doesn't exist. There is no temperature. There's nothing. It's just, what's the temperature? There isn't one. It's just nothing. And it can actually go less than nothing to even like minus two of nothing. It just gets absurd after that. I don't know. It's minus 10 of nothing now. And now it's minus like 600 of nothing. It's like before Christ, you know, it's that kind of thing. Like Christ was zero, you know, on the year scale, it's not scale, it's scale, isn't it? Maybe I should learn how to talk before I do this. Christ was zero. I mean, everything after Christ was countable. Before that, look, man, I don't want to talk about it. That was even before Christ. I mean, Christ started counting, I suppose. I don't know. Before Christ, there was no below zero. I mean, I don't know what's going on with this thing. Christ, for some reason, he was a great religious figure. Yeah, influences like everything. A great historian, sandals, apparently a great carpenter, although you couldn't ever get him to finish a job. But my God, my goodness, such a great figure that as far as time is concerned, nothing existed before Christ. It's like backwards before that. It's like things that happened before Christ are like, it didn't happen that far back. It's like 0 degrees is Christ, and 10 below nothing is like 10 degrees before Christ was even born. Like before Christ was born, what's the point? You know, that's an amazing fact to me, that our entire existence of calendar and of charting our time existence is based on this one guy. Phenomenal, just phenomenal. How I get into religious conversations based on the fact that it's cold outside, I'll never know. But thus, that is where I end up. So it's zero outside, and it's cold. I think now the temperature has risen to a balmy 3. You know, it's funny. At 0 degrees, when it's sunny outside, you actually have to wear sunglasses. Who ever would imagine that you'd have to wear sunglasses when it's below zero outside? It's just kind of like, sunglasses to me are like sitting on a beach and you're sweating into your pupils and these sunglasses because I can't see and stuff like that. And watch out, here comes a shark and a gigantic wave, gnarly dude. You know, or you're like tooling around in your car with the top down with your sunglasses on, you look real slick, you're looking real cool, or you're going to a cocktail party and you whip those sunglasses off and you put them in your teeth, you know, like you're thinking about something. You don't affiliate sunglasses to below zero weather. Like, oh, it's freezing outside, I'm going to freeze to death, where are my sunglasses? It's just amazing. But you need sunglasses today because the sun is just glaring off of that white snow. It's like being in Miami or something. Yeah, it is like being in Miami. Ever been in Miami? Everything is like light colored, everything. Nothing's dark colored because apparently dark colors soak in the heat or something like that. I don't know who came up with this. I think it was Galileo. I don't know. But everything is either pink or white or banana colored. I don't know what their obsession is with banana colors down here. But everything is like really light colored. So sunglasses are only important because of all the freaking buildings. They're all like white stucco buildings. So it's like, oh, it's glare. Hey, stop making your buildings so bright and pastel. Everything's pastel in Miami. Like some kind of second grader decided to paint the city. It's just annoying. Miami, very annoying. I guess you can go down there and swim around in a swimming pool or something and then look at a palm tree and then get the hell out of there. Because otherwise, man, I don't understand the point of that place. I don't understand. Anyway, it's freezing outside. It was just a few days ago. I was saying dress in layers. Take everything you have out of your wardrobe and wear it. Wear everything. Start with the tightest article of clothing and work your way to the loosest that would be on the outside. Wear everything because it's freezing outside. Well, now it's even more than that. And I hope I never have to say this again, but I know I probably will. So just make sure that before you go outside, microwave your pants or something, because it's really, really freezing. And that's your segment today of What Are You Wearing? As lame as that actually was.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Hey kids, we got a ride in store for us today. Yeah, I'm going to take you through the many canals of my head. It's a scary ride, man. It is like Space Mountain because there's just a lot of space up there. And it's dark and scary. Man, it's that. Oh, it's bad up there. Oh, there's a lot of stuff going on up there. A lot of people thinking upstairs in that brain of mine. If I could humanize my brain and my head, you'd see all these little components working and little computer dials and lights flashing and stuff and all these kind of incongruous ideas like coming together on a conveyor belt and little oopaloopas masturbating all over. You don't want to go there. Sounds like a Irish performing group, doesn't it? The masturbating Oompa Loompas are now appearing for 3 nights only. Okay, so I do this thing out of the Boston area, the general Boston area, the GBA, the General Boston Area, and oh my God, everybody's lovable little rapist is appearing at the Wilbur Theater this weekend. Yeah, February 8th, which is Sunday, I believe that's Sunday. Yeah, Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby is appearing at the Wilbur Theater there in the Theater District in Boston. And it's almost sold out, although probably I assume that maybe a third of the people won't show up. But outside, through Facebook and various forms of social media, well, it's Twitter and Facebook. I don't know what else there is, to be honest with you. I guess there's other little stuff that all the geeks know about, but that's pretty much it. They are organizing a gigantic protest on Stewart Street right outside of the Wilbur Theater where Cosby will be performing. And it's a protest. And I don't quite sometimes understand what a protest does. Is it to intimidate the people going into the theater who already have spent like $100 to see this guy? It becomes a financial consideration at that point. I can't stand Bill Cosby. I think he's a horrible man, but I spent $100 on him, so let's see a good show, babe. I mean, seriously, these tickets are not cheap. So this icon, which they call America's father, if he is America's father, then that wiener dude who was sending pictures of his penis delecti is probably the next president, because that's sick. It's just sick. Of course, this is all allegedly. Bill Cosby didn't necessarily do anything. I think the threshold is if 20 women come out and accuse you of rape, then maybe. But 19... that's bullshit. Anyway, so he is performing. He's trying to eke out a living, hoping that this will all go away. And I think, I think the scandal should go away because, after all, when he drugged the women, that wore off. So fair is fair. Now, I'm convinced within my own head, and I don't have to have Cosby go to court because I don't require that in my world. Maybe you can do all your little legal jargon and stuff like that, but there's a court of public opinion, which we call Facebook, And yeah, the court of Facebook, it's very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. It's ruined many a people. He did stuff. He did something. And as I said on a previous podcast, Roseanne Barr, whom I think is a despicable fat pig, that being said, I like pork, so... she even said that, man, you had to know if you were around in the 80s, because her production team is the same production team that did The Cosby Show. They're the same production company. She said, man, everybody in show business in the 80s knew that Bill Cosby was a sexual deviant. They all knew it. They all knew what he was doing. It was just more accepted then. Now it's not. And if women say things back in the 80s, it was scoffed at. When men say it, it's something else. And I guess this thing with Cosby was started by this fellow comedian who brought this to light, which is all total crap on a stick, Roseanne. You were just really... Roseanne is about as cooked a person as I know. Not that I know her, but I know of her in a court of public opinion sort of situation. Anyway, back to Cosby. He's performing Sunday at the Wilbur Theater. It will be a big news item. I'm sure his show inside will be just fine. I'm sure they'll have plenty of cops inside and bouncers to remove those that may protest and yell during his performance. I'm sure that will be the big news story on Monday, Cosby appearing in Boston. And typically what happens is the audience loves him. They give him a standing ovation and a drink. And and he'll make fun of himself maybe once or twice, and people will be disgusted that he even brought it up, even though they bring it up every second. You know, it's just a mess. And I don't care, and I don't think you care, unless you're a relative of somebody that got, quote-unquote, raped or assaulted by Mr. Cosby. You know, rape and assault is like a horrible, horrible thing. But knocking people out and then having your way with them when they're totally lifeless is like a whole nother level of sexual deviancy, as we all know. It's a horrible, weird sort of thing. But please, you've got to understand, and I'm not giving him a pass at all. I'm not giving him a pass. I'm just trying to explain what he probably did. In that time period, back in the 70s and 80s, and maybe even the early 90s, but more prevalent in the 70s, I suppose, when his hit television series, I Spy, was like taken off, men were like assholes. And those that had a lot of money and traveled the world, as Cosby did, which was part of the television show that he did, he was extremely popular. He gets into The Cosby Show, and his name is on the title of the show, and he's America's dad. He's deemed America's dad. You start to feel like you're Teflon, like anything that bad that happens, it just flows off of you. And you can do anything you want and you'll never be caught. And there are tons of celebrities and tons of stories, and you know almost all of them, where these people feel empowered. Same on Wall Street. Same with all these other highfalutin people. If you have money and power and notoriety, you legitimately feel in your brain that no one can touch you, that you can always take care of everything. Cosby had people. You know, this thing like, I'll have your people call my people? He had people. And they would actually contact the accusers, even back then, and say, look, don't even bother, man, you know, don't bother. He's Cosby, you're not. Just try to say something against Cosby. And it would be intimidating to these ladies. Although, see, the only weird thing about this to me, and I truly believe everything I said, although it's all conjecture, the odd thing is a lot of these ladies were very strong lady individuals. Some of them were aspiring models. Those you can pretty much fuck anytime you want. Anybody that's aspiring to be something and they figure, all right, I get a little bit close to the big guy, I'll be in there. Literally, he'll be in there. But that is the nomenclature of that time period. That I get. But a lot of these models and actresses were already somewhat popular and were feeling their own oats, but probably not in comparison to the immense popularity of Cosby, which is why they shut up. So that's it. I don't know. I didn't speak to Cosby. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But anyway, Sunday is that performance. We'll talk about it on Monday and see where that ends up. Should be pretty interesting. There's your social media minute. That's not what it was. It's not a social media minute. I just called it that. But it's not.
Ugh, I hate these big ass prices.
Sounds like you could use some big ass savings.
I'd love some big ass savings.
Kmart Shop Your Way members save 30 cents a gallon.
30 cents a gallon? That's a big ass discount.
Big ass discount.
A really big ass discount.
Really big ass discount.
Honey, this solves your big ass problem.
Totally solves my big ass problem.
Dad, look at that big ass truck.
You're a big ass man.
Hello, big ass man.
Shop Your Way members get big ass savings. Save 30 cents a gallon when you spend $50 or more at Kmart.
Seriously, if this guy was any cooler, he would be pronounced dead. He's Ron Van Dam, and this is The Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you, thank you, thank you so much, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, here's the newest big scandal. And scandals are just fun, man, because they're usually not about you and it's about somebody else. And this is part of this talking behind somebody's back thing. It's just a lot of fun to do. Let's not kid ourselves. It's fantastic. We all do it. We all do it. We wouldn't be able to say anything if we couldn't talk behind somebody's back. That means we couldn't say anything unless the person we're talking about were in the room sitting right next to us. And that's physically impossible to do. Because I don't have the time to get people over there so they can say something about them. So we always talk about them behind their back, which I think is fantastic. You hurt people when you say it to their face. I don't want to hurt people. I'd rather be snide and conniving and spare their feelings by talking behind their back. And by the way, if you talk behind somebody's back, you have to be like a good distance away. Otherwise, they can still hear you. That's all. Okay. Brian Williams is an NBC News anchor. It is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams would actually be the title of that show. The networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, they choose an individual to represent their entire news stature. And the news stature of a television network is huge. It's almost everything. Everything spins off of it. But the integrity and the seriousness of the entire network is based on your news image. So Brian Williams is it for NBC. And he's been doing it a little while now. As you remember, it used to be, there was David Brinkley way back and then there were quite a few NBC news anchors that were very, very well revered and well received. Tom Brokaw, for example. Now it's Brian Williams. So very staunch guy, always in a suit. Even when he takes a shower, he's wearing a suit. That's what you have to do when you're with NBC News and you're the guy or the girl, but here it's the guy. Brian Williams apparently lied. And a news anchor has this image, you cannot lie. Once you lie about something, then everything you say could be construed as perhaps not true. I'm totally safe from that because everything I say is not true. That's not true. That's confusing, isn't it? It pretty much is. Pretty much is. No, everything I say is true, but then stretched to the point where it's not. So I hope I've confused you enough. Anyway, Brian Williams, okay, man? So here's what he did. Years ago, Brian Williams talked about being in a helicopter, going over enemy lines, you know, in the Middle East. And he said his helicopter was shot down, and they had to land an emergency landing. And that's what he reported on the air. And come to find out, he was in a helicopter, but a helicopter that was not shot at. It was an hour behind the one that was shot at. His helicopter was never shot at and not even near the one that was being shot at. So he made up the story, obviously. He claims that his memory is foggy. Let me tell you something. If I were in a helicopter and it got shot down, I would know it. If I was in a helicopter and it didn't get shot down, I would know that too. He's going through the story like they had to make an emergency landing. He didn't. He says he got confused with the other helicopter that he wasn't in. I mean, if that ain't backpedaling, man, then I don't own a bicycle, because that's just absurd. Now, we're going to play this stuff for you so you can form your own opinion, because what I say to you is total crap all the time. So this is important for you. Now, here is the story that he gave that was not true. And he reported this on the air, and this was not true. And this is, he actually said this as part of the newscast, but it was not true.
The story actually started with a terrible moment a dozen years back during the invasion of Iraq, when the helicopter we were traveling in was forced down after being hit by an RPG. Our traveling NBC News team was rescued, surrounded, and kept alive by an armored mechanized platoon from the U.S. Army 3rd Infantry.
All right. That never happened. But this is in his newscast. He's doing a little magazine piece within his newscast, and he said that he was shot down, but he wasn't. Now, this came to light recently, and for a couple of reasons. He actually had to go on the air a few nights ago and do an apology saying that what he said wasn't true. And this is his apology that he did a few nights ago.
I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran.
It was a bungled attempt by him. So he's admitting that that was incorrect. That was not correct. Now, he was on David Letterman's show, Late Night with David Letterman, back in March, I believe, of 2013. So it's a couple of years ago. And even on that show, he recounted being shot down and the reaction of being shot down in a helicopter that he admits at this point never happened.
Four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
What happens the minute everybody realizes you've been hit?
We figure out how to land safely, and we did.
So he's talking to Letterman there. You can hear Letterman there interviewing him. And that was the total fabrication. Now, he's claiming that the fabrication was based on confusion, where he confused himself to be in the helicopter that was shot down. In this interview, obviously, for what you've heard, there was no like confusion at all. He's relaying a story. Now, either he's really losing it upstairs in the brain area, which is very possible, because I think I'm on that road myself, or he's like flat out lying. My impression, he's flat out lying. He was not shot down in a helicopter. You would have to have been shot down in a helicopter to be able to say publicly on a talk show and on the news that you were shot down in a helicopter. You can't say all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't me. I mean, God, that's like saying I was in a horrific car accident. My car flipped over like 20 times, landed on the roof. I crawled out, and just at the last second, the car caught fire, and there was a gigantic fireball, and it just missed me by a split second, and I sat there all cut up and all dazed, and it was just a horrible thing. My life was hanging in the balance. Oh, wait a minute, that wasn't me. I mean, come on. I was running down the street. There was a guy chasing me with a gun. He kept shooting. The bullets were like flying off the pavement next to me. Had any one of those bullets been just a quarter of an inch closer to my body, I wouldn't be here right now. I was running for my life. My heart was racing. I ducked behind a garbage can, and somehow I was fine, and the bullets stopped. And my God, though, it was like the worst time of my life. oh, wait a minute, that wasn't me. That was another guy that I saw. I mean, you don't do that. You just can't possibly do that unless you have a mental condition for which you're being treated seriously by a team of doctors in white coats. Otherwise, you can't confuse a traumatic situation like that. You can't. Unless you just made it up. And I'm sorry, Brian, but I think you made it up. That's really hard to confuse. I don't know. I don't know.
Are you aware that one in every seven Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
I don't say them a lot. I really don't. Compared to other people, I am so squeaky clean, it's not funny. I am very, very squeaky, 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 squeaky clean. Very squeaky, squeaky clean. Here's an odd story out of Missouri. And by the way, who the hell knows where Missouri is? I mean, what's the point of that state? If I were doing this nationally all throughout the country, we are, but if I knew that there was a station carrying us in Missouri, I wouldn't have said that because I'm a kiss ass. But what I'm doing here is talking behind Missouri's back, assuming that Missouri can't hear me. I don't know where Missouri is. I think it's somewhere like over there. It's in the middle of the country, and they put it there so I get lost in the shuffle. I think those states in the middle of the country, you can kind of like a Rubik's Cube, you can just kind of shuffle them around and try to figure out where they belong, because I have no freaking idea where that state is. And I think I would drive through it, but not know that I did. It's like if there was a road sign that said, now entering Missouri, I'd say, yeah, like, and so what? What's your point? I don't know anybody in Missouri or anything like that. I don't think I've said Missouri in like 20 years. I don't think I've even mentioned that word. It just never comes up. Is it still a state, or did they move it somewhere else in the Rubik's Cube of Middle America? I do not know. I have no idea. I don't even know what they do there. I think people in Missouri just walk around saying to themselves, "The fuck are we doing here? I mean, what? There's no point to us. There's no point to us anymore. We're not needed." Nobody talks about us. Nobody even knows any cities in us. I mean, we're just like, wow. But something did happen in Missouri, and this is what happened. And this is maybe an indication of what some of the people in Missouri are like, which is unfair because people in every state are really not totally there. In Missouri, there was a six-year-old kid. And apparently, he didn't know the meaning of the phrase stranger danger. I didn't either. I thought it was just a rhyme from a Mother Goose thing. But apparently not. Apparently, kids who are 6 years old are supposed to know that you don't hop in a car with anybody that opens the door and says, "Hey, kid, you want to ride?" "Sure." "Would you like some candy when you get in a car?" "Oh, good. Where should I sit?" So this kid apparently was just so gullible. Let me tell you something. I know adults that are far more gullible than that. So, you know, don't give me that crap. But this kid was like on his way to be like Gullible King, you know, King Gullible. He would just get in the car with anybody, apparently, and he always thought it was fine. And his parents were just at a loss on how to solve this. So what his parents decide to do is do some tough love. And tough love means eventually you're going to get in trouble and be part of the media onslaught. That's what tough love means. So they decided this guy, the father, went to his workplace and found a coworker and said, look, Joe, here's, I'm sorry to use Joe. Look, Bob, here's what I want to scare my kid. I want to scare my kid so that my kid never accepts rides from strangers and talks to strangers. I just want to scare my kid straight, scare him straight. So here's what I want you to do, Bob, get in the car, pick the kid up, threaten him, make him really scared so he never gets in a car with a stranger ever again. Will you do that for me, Bob?
This is kind of weird. It's kind of weird, but sure. Yeah, sure. We're good buddies and we live in Missouri, and what the hell else am I going to do today?
So Bob gets in the car, and I don't know if his name is Bob, and he gets in the car, and he opens the car door, and a little six-year-old is outside, and he says, hey, you want to get my car, six-year-old? And he says, yeah, sure, yeah, you ride. He gets in the car, and this coworker, Bob, to scare the kid, which was the plan, kidnaps him and says, I'm kidnapping you. And he puts a thing around his mouth, and he ties him up in the back seat of the car, and he threatens him. He says, "You're never going to see your family again." And he makes horrible, horrible threats to this little six-year-old kid, and really traumatizes a six-year-old kid. And the story gets out that this is what happened, and now the parents are being reviewed by the social services. And they're saying, hey, we didn't do anything wrong. We're parents. We're exercising tough love. So we created this scenario in order to teach our child a lesson. We can do that. We're parents. We can do that if we want to. We didn't do anything illegal. We can do this if we want to. We can put on a little play in order to teach our kid a lesson. That's fine. So that's going to be a big case. So my question to you is, did you ever hear Missouri? My question to you is, that's not a question. Question to me, do you think that the parents indeed had the perfect right as parents of a child to say, I'm going to teach my kid a lesson. I got a problem with my kid. Obviously, that's a bad thing to do, is to trust strangers. I got to teach my kid a lesson. I think it's like totally wrong and probably like incredibly mentally abusive, but that's just me. Are we crossing the line? Can a parent do something like that to straighten out a kid? I mean, I think we do it with drugs. You know, if a kid's on drugs, we have somebody like pick them up, and a cop, you know, who says to them, hey, I'm scaring you. I'm going to scare you now. I'm going to put you in jail. All right, go home. I've scared you enough. Maybe you'll never do this again. That's legal to do. So the parents are saying, hey, I they're my kid. I can bring my kid up the way I want, do anything wrong. I mean, didn't really have the kid. It was just phony stuff. It was just a lesson we were teaching them. I find that pretty fascinating. I don't really know the answer to that, to be honest with you. I think a parent can really do whatever they want, but they're not really putting the kid in danger. All they did was scare the living hell out of the kid. Are you allowed to, as a parent, scare the living hell out of your kid in order to discipline them? Kind of, yeah. It doesn't make you a wonderful parent by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think most people would think that's a wonderful idea. But can they do it without being prosecuted? I think, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. All right, we're going to talk now to a guy that we've talked to maybe about back in July, I guess. He's Dr. Timothy O'Leary. Yeah, which is very close to Timothy Leary, which was an icon in the hallucination world, so to speak. This is different. This is Dr. Timothy O'Leary. We're going to talk about the heart and about heart disease, which pretty much all of us really have. By the way, if you're like 40 years old and you go to the doctor and you ever see your medical chart, you will shit a brick, because you'll see that you have all these diseases that you never knew you had. Like, wait a minute, I got heart disease? Yeah, you got a little hypertension. Your blood pressure is kind of borderline, so we call that heart disease. What? Are you serious, man? You are tagging me heart disease?
Yeah, because technically that's what it is as soon as it's...
What? Seriously?
Yeah, and there's you got some... Your blood sugar is a little elevated, just a little bit. You must eat a lot of sugar or something. Yeah, so is it under control? Yeah, it's like borderline. It's like, you know, just be careful. And by the way, you have diabetes.
What? I don't have diabetes.
Well, you don't really have it, but technically, medically, you do.
Man,
don't ever look at your chart. Don't ever look at your chart.
God.
Do you wear glasses?
Yeah, I wear glasses.
Yeah, look at your chart, man. You have some kind of eye disease.
What?
Yeah, if you don't have perfect eyesight, you've got some type of degeneration in your eyes. You've got some kind of eye disease.
What? Are you serious?
That's what it says on your chart. You'd be surprised, man. Never look at your chart. Never look at your chart ever, ever, ever. It'll depress you to the hilt because everybody has a list of diseases on their medical chart if you're over 40 years old. And it doesn't mean that you're awful and really hard up and you're going to die tomorrow. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that by definition, if you're not perfect, you're diseased. I know, I know. And you know why they do this? To save their ass. Doctors and hospitals and doctor groups, they call it that so that they say, yeah, I said he had a problem. I said he had a problem. I said she had a problem. Look on the chart. I said she had a problem, so don't blame me. Don't blame me for not knowing about it. It's just awful. It's just awful. Anyway, we're going to talk about heart disease with Dr. Timothy O'Leary. Sorry, Dr. O'Leary, but I'm sorry. I had to say it, man. We're speaking to Timothy O'Leary. He's a doctor and a PhD, the VA's chief research and development officer. He's in the Washington, D.C. area, as we've previously established. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you here on the program. Do you deal specifically with VA hospital concerns as far as the subject is concerned? Or are we talking about a broad manner?
So, yes, absolutely. You know, VA has had a strong research program for 90 years. Mm-hmm. We founded our first cardiovascular disease research activity here in Washington, D.C., actually, 90 years ago in 1935. And in this heart month, I think it's important to realize that VA research has led to many of the advances in the prevention and treatment of heart disease that have benefited all Americans.
Okay. What is the number one killer of Americans?
Well, indeed, it is heart disease.
Heart disease.
And it kills about one person every 40 seconds. That's what? Over 2,000 people a day.
That poor person. No, I'm kidding. That's frightening in itself. But, I mean, heart disease would be a very, very wide category. Am I correct?
Absolutely. For most people, it consists of the consequences of atherosclerosis. Some people call that hardening of the arteries, which is in large part gives rise to heart failure. It gives rise to heart attacks, gives rise to stroke. Mm-hmm. And it can give rise to related diseases such as peripheral vascular disease, all of which have a potential to kill and or seriously disable one for a very long period of time.
Now, but in a positive sense, when we talk about heart disease, we're talking about high blood pressure, some cholesterol problems perhaps, which is not only a hereditary ethnic situation, but it's also brought on by age. And I don't know for sure because I'm not a doctor, but I'm assuming that more than half of Americans have some definition of heart disease. But if noticed and treated, you can be just fine and live a long life.
I think that's exactly right. You know, many of the causes of heart disease are preventable or reversible. Smoking is a huge reversible cause. Mm-hmm. Physical inactivity, which gives rise to, helps to give rise to obesity. Yeah. And these, in turn, you know, raise risk for diabetes and other things which increase the risk of, of heart disease. But you're right. Some of those can be prevented through lifestyle changes that we can do, or others, such as high blood pressure, which sometimes is hereditary, we can treat by medicine.
Absolutely, and it's incredible, because I don't think we'd be having the same kind of outcome conversation maybe 30 or 40 years ago, because medications were not that advanced medically. Now they are, and thank God they are. It's a good time to be alive and to take care of these problems, but you have to do something about it.
Well, it is. In fact, it was a set of VA studies on treatment of mild to moderate hypertension back in the 1960s and 70s, which really fostered the widespread use of drugs to prevent hypertension, and has contributed greatly to the reduction of death due to heart disease in the United States. And the subsequent use of statins has improved that even more.
Yeah.
So medical research by VA investigators and others has had a tremendous impact in reducing the burden of heart disease. But as our statistics show, it's still a big problem.
Yeah. Why do you think that people... you know, VA hospitals, you know, all over the country. Why do you think people don't go get checkups and don't take care of themselves? Are they scared to go to a doctor? Are they, or do they just feel okay, so that's good enough for them? What do you think the reason is?
Well, I don't know. I think there may be as many reasons as there are people, you know. We've got too busy, I've got other things to do, or it can't happen to me. You know, we all start out that way, I think, when we're teenagers, right? We're immortal. And sometimes you have to be hit on the side of the head with sort of a 2x4 or a medical event to say, well, maybe that's not so true anymore. But whatever the reason, I think if you are at risk of heart disease, or if you because of, you know, weight or physical activity, or because of smoking, then it's a good idea to get in and talk to somebody and see if you can get some help in reducing those risks.
Tell you a funny story, which isn't all that funny. I have mild hypertension. I take medication for it, as I think all of my friends do. And I say to myself, my God, thank God I have hypertension. And people say, why would you say thank God you have heart disease? And I say, because I'm eating differently. Otherwise, I'd be going to McDonald's every day, eating fried chicken every day. I know I would be. I'd be smoking 20 packs of cigarettes a day. But thank God I have this, because now I'm healthier than ever, because I don't eat those silly foods. I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't overindulge, because I'm aware of it. I'm a better person because I have this.
Well, I think it's really good to hear that you've made those lifestyle changes, and I think it's I applaud you and others that have done that. At the same time, wouldn't it be better if somehow or another we never got to where we needed to make it, because we were living healthy lives from the very beginning?
But like, you know, like you said in the beginning, it's human nature just doesn't work that way. When you're in your 20s, you're indestructible, and that it just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. But you're right.
But one of the things going for our veterans is that when our veterans are serving in the military, they are extremely fit. And so they go through their 20s and maybe their 30s and 40s under conditions in which they maintain a high level of physical fitness. This will reduce their risk for heart disease later. And if veterans and others could figure out how to maintain this same level of fitness when we leave the military, then the need for treatment and its potential complications may be dramatically reduced.
Because I know a lot of veterans smoke, and that might be a generational thing, or it might be a stress thing or a crutch thing because of what you're going through, but they do. And I know a lot of them were, as you say, extremely fit. And then they get back into their home life and they don't work out anymore. And all that muscle turns to fat and kind of even worse. So, yeah, I mean, there's maintenance there, too.
Yeah, in fact, my father was a veteran that smoked. And
yeah.
It was smoking and heart disease that ultimately caused him to die. So this is very personal to me because quitting smoking and maintaining a healthy lifestyle means that you'll be around for your children and grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I urge our veterans that need help doing these things to please, you know, see your healthcare provider, whether they be the VA or somebody else.
Okay. How do we get more information about this?
We have a lot of information on our website, www.research.va.gov. It links out to a full range of our research programs and healthcare and other benefits from VA.
Okay. Let me ask you one more thing before we depart, which is kind of a little bit off of the charts here. When I go to the gym, the people, the trainers at the gym, they say, you got to get on that treadmill, you got to get on that machine that looks like a torture thing, and you got to do it for this long, and you're going to feel a certain high from passing out and almost dying. And I say to them, isn't that like a little too much for most people? Like, do gyms sometimes like push you to do more than your body really should be doing heart-wise?
So I think those that are well-trained do not. I'm sure that as with everything else, there are places where there are excesses. I think good trainers, for example, when you're on the treadmill, they will, especially at the beginning, they'll give you an idea of, you know, how high you should be moving your heart rate. You may have a heart rate monitor on, and they should work hard to introduce things gradually so that you know, you don't suddenly go on to a binge exercise, which if you do have a sick heart, could cause bad things.
Yeah, because see,
it's all in the trainer.
It is all in the trainer. Sometimes, you know, a lot of these gyms, there are no trainers. You just go there, your membership, and you get on the machine. You stay as long as you want. And I kind of like go, careful. Doctor, so much. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Timothy O'Leary, and for that added information.
It's great to talk to you, and I want to give a special thank you to those in the audience that have served our country in uniform.
Very nicely said. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Oh, that's nice. I called him Doctor so much by mistake, pointing out my foibles. But I thought it was kind of cute. I'm going to call him Doctor so much. I think I really will. I think I really will. I think I really will. Hey, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day, wonderful weekend. I'll be back with you again on Monday. Until then, I wish you peace.